Richard Murdoch wins the GOP Senate primary in a blowout. How will he match up against Joe Donnelly? Dick Lugar recognized on Capitol Hill. Susan Brooks wins a congressional primary, and Mark Massa takes his place on the state Supreme Court. That plus winners and losers and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 11, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Dick Lugar was sent packing after 36 years in the U.S. Senate. The Republican icon lost the GOP primary to State Treasurer Richard Murdoch, who won in spectacular fashion, 61-39. The verdict was in even before the food arrived at the Murdoch celebration.
Hoosier Republicans want to see the Republicans inside the United States Senate take a more conservative track, and we're looking forward to helping them do that.
Could you have done this without the Tea Party?
Well, without question, that group gave us a tremendous amount of volunteers. We had 1,300 key Republican precincts. We had people sitting in chairs there 12 hours all day today, so they played a vital role. I don't know that we could have done it without them.
And I thank my campaign team, who made enormous personal sacrifices and never stopped working hard or seeking a path to victory. Most of all, I want to thank my loving wife, Char.
How do you explain the size of the Murdoch win? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Schella. Mike McDaniel, what happened to the Lugar Get Out the Vote operation?
Well, I think they worked hard at it, but apparently they had a lot of bad information from the phone calls. They made over four phone calls and worked at it very hard. But there are several reasons for the size of this victory by Murdoch, one of which was the Lugar campaign was, Senator Lugar was tagged with the idea of being out of touch with Republican organization. I think there's some truth to that. They've not had a lot of contact with those folks. There were county chairmen that have never met Senator Lugar. I think that played a role. I think the fact that he was tagged as Obama's favorite senator did have an effect.
Word.
I think the residency thing spent too much time early in the campaign fighting that question, the fact that he's lived in Washington all this time. I think all of those were contributing factors. I think $3 million of negative ads by outside groups was a contributing factor. And I'll give and the biggest reason that Republicans said in the survey was that the fact that he's 80 and they thought that, you know, that he was too old to run for another term. And then you combine all that with the fact that Murdoch, which I was unaware of, had 1,200 key precincts where he had a person for 12 hours in those 1,200 key precincts working it all day. He had a huge army on the ground. And Dan will tell you, that's hard to do these days, to have that kind of ground organization out there who are actually committed to you and working at it. So all those were contributing factors in the size of this loss, I think.
Nobody, with the exception of Lugar and his key staffers, it seems, expected him to win. But I don't know anybody that expected a blowout to this degree.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the Tea Party that I didn't hear Mike say. I mean, the fact that Richard Murdoch was the only candidate running against Richard Lugar in this race, unlike the 2010 experience, Lugar and Dan Coats got almost the same percentage of the vote in the primary. Coats won, Lugar lost because Richard Murdoch was the only Tea Party candidate. The margins kind of surprised me. I thought it would be in the 10 to 15 range after we saw that last poll from Matthews and Yang. The Tea Party had an effect, and FreedomWorks and all the outside groups really did an effect on Senator Lugar's numbers.
The poll from Matthews and Yang showed Lugar was down 10 points a week out. Mm-hmm. But he reacted badly, I thought. He sounded desperate. And did that backfire on him?
I can't imagine that that helped him, because that's exactly the way it sounded. And it was kind of a, he felt bad because he finds himself in a position after 36 years in the Senate and being an international leader, diplomat, representative of the United States, and he's begging people for their vote because he's getting kicked in the teeth by, you know, what's going on. So I think that really did work against him in the end, and it almost became a fait accompli at that point.
Yeah. Richard Murdoch said on election night that his campaign went from Mission Impossible in 2011 to the inescapable conclusion at the end.
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty, what turned out to be a pretty accurate assessment. If you look, if we were having this conversation 12 months ago, I think we all, and we did, it would have had a much different tone and a much different flavor than what we were talking about today. So I think that's accurate. As far as the factors, we've heard about seven or eight of them cited now, and they probably all contributed. You know, the phrase perfect storm is overused, but I mean, the residency issue that Dick Lugar had, the age, and a lot of these things are beyond his control. I mean, you can't,
sure,
you can't, there's no fountain of youth that anybody has found yet. I mean, when you're 80, you're 80. The long tenure, the concerns that many voters appear to have about Washington, whether or not he's committed to try, was committed to trying to fix those, or whether he was part of the problem is depends, I guess, on your outlook. But all of these things, as well as the outside money, money does play an important role. And in the past, the conventional wisdom would have said Dick Lugar has a significant fundraising advantage. And he did as a candidate. But when you bring in the outside dollars, it basically levels the playing field.
Right.
To go back to your point about reacting badly to that last survey, one of the things I left out of my list was there was never any coherent positive message in this entire campaign for Lugar.
That's right.
Once they started responding
That's
to
right.
the negatives, and you have to respond or you're guilty.
Right.
But there was never a coherent, all of the things he'd accomplished throughout his
right.
career that people who even love Lugar were desperately looking for in this campaign to say, look, you've done all these wonderful things. Why aren't you talking about them?
He only held one formal availability with the media, and that was after this poll came out, and it was entirely defensive.
I think it was amazing how flat-footed this campaign was, because we did talk about this a year ago when this started, how they won't be caught short, because we saw what happened in 2010, and these people know what they're doing, and they're experienced. And in the end, none of that was true, because all of this worked against them.
Well, In modern campaigns now, you have to take out your opponent before they get started. Richard Murdoch, yes, he's a two-time yeah. statewide elected official, but his name ID was incredibly low at the beginning of this campaign, and they didn't want to go negative against him to define him, and they paid the price.
Yeah, they tried Murdoch, to demonize him, but it was too late.
It was too late. Murdoch and the Tea Party were very on message all along.
Yeah.
The problem for Republicans in this race is that there wasn't a positive, coherent message, Michael, from either candidate. Murdoch's message was all about Lugar. Lugar's message at the end was all about Murdoch. And so there's really a divided party here.
All right. Republican Richard Murdoch will face Democrat Joe Donnelly in November, and there's already a battle over labels for Murdoch. Democrats want you to believe that Murdoch is an extremist. Republicans want you to believe that he is mainstream. Murdoch appeared with the governor and other Republican statewide office holders at what was billed as a unity event. However, Murdoch's primary opponent, Richard Lugar, wasn't there, and there was no effort made to get him there. Lugar still hasn't called Murdoch, but the others wanted to demonstrate that the GOP is behind him.
The first label they're going to try to put on me is that Murdoch is this wild-eyed Tea Party guy.
He comes right out of the heart, right out of the mainstream of our party.
I would invite all voters to take a look. And I think if you're a Senator Lugar voter, you ask who best reflects the ideals, the service, and the vision of Senator Lugar.
Joe Donnelly appealing to Lugar voters. Dan Parker, do you really expect Lugar voters to back Donnelly?
I expect some to take a look at Joe Donnelly. He's a centrist Democrat, got a record to back it up. Joe Donnelly, I think, was the only candidate to call Senator Lugar and thank him for his service.
He got voicemail.
But he made the attempt. And you don't have a unity press conference without the person who ends up losing the race. But, you know, this is going to be a race between a Tea Party Richard Murdoch and centrist Joe Donnelly.
Lugar said in his formal remarks on election night that he congratulates Richard Murdoch and that he hopes Republicans keep the seat.
He also said he hoped Murdoch wins.
So that Republicans keep the seat.
Right.
But it wasn't exactly an endorsement. He called him unqualified beforehand. He didn't endorse him.
Well,
he didn't make a concession
call. Hillary Clinton said Barack Obama wasn't ready for the job in the Indiana primary, but she ended up being Secretary of State. So
because
you're talking about things in primaries. Come on. Give me a break.
Did Lugar act badly?
No, Lugar said, I hope that Richard Murdoch wins so
he
we can have a majority. And then he also said, here's some things I think he needs to do. But let me tell you, this guy's gonna put together a good campaign for the fall. Yeah. He's won 3 statewide elections in the last 5 years and had been a top vote-getter in every one of them. He's got a good organization. I think they are overstating the Tea Party involvement in this compared to mainstream Republicans who were really, a lot of them who never knew Lugar, backed Murdoch and got behind him, which is why the margin was so big. So I think you're going to see a very competitive campaign. I think Murdoch will beat Joe Donnelly.
I have one question. Mainstream Republicans believe that Social Security and Medicare
and so
are unconstitutional.
So does Murdoch. Murdoch
questioned the constitutionality of Medicare
Murdoch's
and Social Security.
Murdoch talked about honoring the commitment to people
he
over 55.
He is a Tea Party candidate.
He's also talked about what you got to do to keep
John,
it going. You guys are running away
John,
from that idea.
Murdoch won this primary by going to the right around Dick Lugar.
Right.
You would expect that he would go toward the middle now. He says he's not going to.
You know, I think it'll be an interesting way to go. He can say that now, but there's a lot of time between now and November, and they'll have a lot of information about what's going on. Now, I think that Republicans will tend to want to support him. He has to give them a reason to do so because of the nature of that primary. So unless he does that, and I think he will. I mean, they showed great party discipline with their campaign during the primary, but he will definitely have to, if not in word, in deed, let people feel comfortable in that mainstream Republican party.
And on certain issues specifically, he's going to be in particularly the industrial or manufacturing areas of the state.
Well, Donnelly wants to make the auto industry a big issue.
Well,
he supported the bailout. Murdoch tried to stop the Chrysler bankruptcy.
Right, and Murdoch will say why it was to protect the funds and the assets of the pension funds. And that worked apparently for a large number of Republican voters.
I think most Republican voters considered that.
It was not an issue. Is the fact of the matter.
Different year.
But
it's going to be a different year.
Come general election, that is going to be an issue, and when it's going to be very tangible sort of situation when you have these people who work in the automotive supply industry or in the manufactured housing industry, as in Joe Donnelly's district, they're going to say, oh boy, here we are now. Those of us who are fortunate enough to have jobs. We might not have had them, and I think that will resonate. But I think in terms of one of the more interesting things I've heard on the show in a long time was about 5 minutes ago when Dan said, you know, you got to blow away your opponent early. Maybe you didn't use the word phrase blow away.
Define. I thought I said define.
Which is why they're attacking him.
Define him early.
Yeah.
But it is interesting how both.
They waited until about 2 hours after the verdict came in.
I'm not sure it even waited because I'm sure all of our inboxes and both sides, senatorial committee on both sides, have already started the definition process. And it's fascinating how there is no honeymoon, there is no let up, there is no breathing period. Let's take a deep breath. The campaign is in full swing.
All right. The day after the Lugar defeat, Washington was filled with tributes. Among those who issued public praise of Lugar were President Obama, Vice President Biden, and Senator John Kerry.
Fashion, we won't be successful as Richard Lugar tried to do and was defeated for doing it. There's something wrong in the constituencies that don't realize that progress is made by the parties working together, not by one party conquering the other.
Time and time again throughout his career, Dick Lugar has really focused on issues of strategic importance to the United States and its security. And I can't agree with Senator Kerry more. He looked for a bipartisan approach to so many things. We always knew he was a Hoosier conservative. You weren't going to push over anything when it came to Dick Lugar. He was strong in his values, but he always listened, and he was always, always a gentleman, always.
Senate floor speeches there from two Democrats, Steve Cohen of Tennessee and Dick Durbin of Illinois. Where were those guys when Lugar needed them?
Well, they were keeping quiet, hoping it wasn't going to hurt them. I mean, we saw what happened with, you know, the president and all of that. So, you know, they were staying out of it, hoping that he would come through.
Will Lugar's legacy be hurt by the way this campaign was conducted?
I don't think so. When you have the kind of long public record of public service that Dick Lugar did, not only in the U.S. Senate, but prior to that, of course, in municipal government as mayor of our state's largest city, people are going to remember that. In fact, some of the comments, you didn't have this in the introduction, but if you look at the statements from John Kerry and others, alluded to other members of the Senate who had, in the case of William Fulbright, another senator who served on the same committee that John Kerry now chairs, saying he lost in a divisive primary, and the name is still vaunted. It's sort of in the legislative hall of fame, and you can look at other lawmakers who have done that. And I think Dick Lugar has a good it would be a first ballot inductee into the legislative hall of fame, if you will.
Yeah, in terms of Indiana politics, he's one of the more memorable characters in the 20th century.
Oh, no question. What got me about what Senator Durbin said there was he was a Hoosier conservative that none of us knew we could push over. Well, the problem was Hoosiers didn't know he was a Hoosier conservative because he lost touch with the people of Indiana as far as coming back. They knew it out there.
Right.
If they could have told that story here over a consistent period of time, he wouldn't have been in that situation today. His legacy is not hurt by this. He will go down as one of the most accomplished members of the United States Senate that's ever held a seat there.
Agreed?
Agreed. I mean, he's a statesman, a gentleman. I thought Senator Durbin said it right. It's a shame that the Senate's losing another moderate member that was willing to work across the aisle, but we have a chance to elect one in Joe Donnelly.
And you got your wish that you wanted to run against Murdoch rather than Lugar, right?
Well,
right.
I was rooting for whichever Richard survived. I thought it was two different matchups, but we'll take the matchup of a centrist Democrat versus a Tea Party.
Yeah, you're going to lose. On message.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Dick Lugar's legacy damaged by his performance in the 2012 primary? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it's too soon to tell. Last week's question was, do you support term limits? 37% said yes, change is good. 63% said no. That's why we have elections. If you want to take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The toughest congressional primary in the state went right down to the wire. Susan Brooks won the GOP nomination in the 5th District over David McIntosh by 1 percentage point and fewer than 1,000 votes.
I appreciate their trust in me, and it's my honor to accept the nomination to represent the Republican Party. Remember, it is just the general election, folks, and we've got to get through to the general election.
The only prediction I missed right there, close race, John Schwantes.
Ann Delaney got it right. And I said it was up for grabs.
Yeah.
I said one of my friends would win, so I got it right.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Okay, John Schwantes, what was the difference in that race?
Again, a number of factors. I don't think you can point to just one thing, but the biggest factor may have been one of the factors in the race we just talked about, and that was the residency question, the notion of being out of touch. The success, apparently, of David McIntosh's opponents of raising questions about whether he lived in Anderson in the property he rented or in the Florida home or in the Virginia home. And I think that probably resonated in that race as it did in the U.S. Senate race, the notion that he had effectively been focused his attention on D.C. as opposed to Indiana for a long period of time.
I think David McIntosh also tested the limits of negative campaigning. He was doing his campaign, his campaign did killer phone calls, and the negative ads and messages in direct mail were not entirely honest with regard to Susan Brooks's record.
Oh, they were more than not entirely honest. They were outright dishonest in a couple of occasions. And I think you're absolutely right. I think they viewed this as the way they had to go to win because they knew they had this huge deficit because of the residency question. And they pushed it all the way, and it blew up in their faces. And I think that's really a good thing for the process because that's really horrible. And I have to say, Jim, I missed this race badly.
you said Wayne Siebold.
I did.
Fourth place?
Yeah, well, you know, the theory was sound.
Hey, he started with the
practice was
on election night.
There I think Grant County came in first. He came in at 41% in the first report.
And then he was done. So, yeah. I did miss that one.
You didn't get your wish in this case.
Well, I probably the only person who was not happy that David McIntosh won was probably Scott Reske. But, This was the year of the residency, and this is a fitting end to David McIntosh's political career in Indiana.
Is his career over, do you think?
Probably. I think the residency thing was huge. I think as a result of that, your interview with him that you did where he walked off camera at the end of it because he didn't have an answer to that question was very telling to a lot of people. I think that was kind of the beginning of the end there. And then he started running attack ads on both John McGough and Susan Brooks, and you could see that he was almost desperate as a result of it
I've never seen an ad like that where one candidate attacks two candidates
at the same time because he knew they were both close and he wanted to get them both, so they ran it against both of them. It was bizarre. I mean, I think Susan Brooks, her one line that everybody remembers is that I'm running against a bunch of good guys. And that line says, I'm a good person, but I'm also the only lady in this race.
Right.
And I think that set her apart early on, and people remembered that.
And she did some negative mail, but I think her campaign was more positive.
She did it out of response to the attacks.
It was more positive than the next two challengers. All right. The newest justice on the Indiana Supreme Court was sworn in at a public ceremony this week. Mark Massa officially took the oath of office privately last month. He was appointed by Governor Mitch Daniels to succeed Chief Justice Randall Shepard, who retired in March. Massa, a one-time sports writer, drew laughs with a reference to the Masters golf tournament.
As my mom and dad slipped this robe on me, I couldn't help thinking of Bubba Watson last month at Augusta. When they put the green jacket on him in Butler Cabin after he won the Masters and Jim Nance asked him to describe his emotions, Bubba said, I never got this far in my dreams. Well, neither did I.
Mike McDaniel, who will be the next Chief Justice?
I wish I knew. I don't know. But if you take a look at that court, you couldn't go wrong with any of those people. We have one of the best Supreme Courts in the United States. They have not been very partisan ever in the way they conduct their business over the recent years. I don't think they will start doing that now. And I think you could pick about any of them. But the Massa pick was a great pick. What a wonderful ceremony that was. He's going to be a great member of that body for a long time.
They're going to choose the next Chief Justice next week.
I know who it won't be.
Either of the Democrats, right?
Well, it probably is not going to be Frank Sullivan.
Because he's leaving.
He's retiring, yes.
So then you got Robert Rucker. Think he's got a shot?
Michael knows this stuff better than I do. He knows the court much better than I do. Probably not.
I still think of Mark Massa as a fellow reporter at the Indiana Daily Student. He would come in and his Monday morning in his hockey jersey, and I just want the new justice to remember that anything I did back then that you may recall was a youthful indiscretion, and I think we can agree to put that behind.
All right, any idea on the next Chief Justice?
If I were betting, I would say Justice David.
Stephen David. Put your money there. All right, finally, time for winners and losers in the primary election. Let's go to the round table. Big winner, Mike McDaniel.
Big winner, Susan Brooks. I think that was a great win. Everybody expected McIntosh to win that one early on, and she ran a great campaign and won.
Dan.
Big winner, Joe Donnelly, matchup against a Tea Party Republican.
He didn't have an opponent.
And by the way, Murdoch got more votes in a contested primary than Donnelly got in an uncontested primary.
John Katzenberger, big winner.
I got to say that Murdoch was the big winner.
You can't knock off a six-term incumbent and not be named the big winner.
That's true.
I think that's... we can stipulate that.
But in Susan Brooks' case, she's probably going to win that seat and be there for a long time. Murdoch's got a heck of a battle in the fall. Take your pick. Big loser, Dan.
Moderate Republicans.
Big David loser. McIntosh.
You can't be a six-term incumbent and lose and not be deemed the big loser.
Yeah. Representative Democracy is the big loser in this because of the culture of fear brought on by all these negative ads.
Dick Lugar's the big loser in my book. I think a best performance by an interest group, Mike.
Boy, I this sounds weird, but I think the doctors group that supported Dr. John McGough did it in a positive way and brought his numbers up, according to everybody I've talked to, almost 12 points in that last go-round with their support of him.
Club for Growth for their negative ads against Dick Lugar. Chris Ciccola got his revenge.
Yeah, as much as it pains me to say this, I have to agree with you on that because they did what they set out to do, and it did it in spectacular fashion, unfortunately.
Yeah, if you define best as results, then Club for Growth and some of the others, FreedomWorks and others.
We got to go there. We may have more winners and losers next week. That's
Indiana
Week
Review. More,
Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.